following is a remastered version of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Everyone, welcome to the Pulse Gamecast, episode 18. I'm Gradol.
And I'm Jason.
And, of course, we start off with a little technical difficulty on my side, so forget that and move on. back in the saddle, real life put in its place and making room for, you know, the important stuff. So here we are again. Jay, as we always do, what's been keeping you busy?
Well, it looks like MechWarrior Online kept me busy for a little bit. Not a ton, gotta admit, not a ton. About 20 minutes or so, but I logged into the challenge, the faction challenge, and chose my faction and tried to do a little bit of that. I reinstalled the EVE client just in case, because it's always good to have that installed. And then I logged into some EQ2, and since my character had been upgraded to that epic level, I went ahead and did some house decorating on that free, that big mansion they give you. What's it called? Mm-hmm.
The Unrest.
The Unrest, that's it, thank you. The Unrest. I didn't have anything to fill that bad boy. It's mega grande.
All right.
What about you?
Well, before we move on to me real quick, I got a couple questions. One is the faction challenge for MechWarrior?
Yeah.
Or whatever you called it. What exactly is that? Do you not get to just join what house you want?
Yeah, whenever you log into MechWarrior Online, as part of your profile, you list whether or not you're going to belong to one of the major factions, you know, Steiner, Davion, Free Rassle Hag, you name it, you know. And then you can also be a lone wolf, which is non-aligned. And basically what they're doing here, and this is just me speculating at this point because they haven't announced it, but they did say in the developer's notes they've hinted at it really heavily to the point where they've almost spoon-fed it, that when the clan invasion comes along, by then they plan on having the factions in their proper place and everyone actually fighting for control, persistent control of a universe, so that when the clans invade, basically we'll be reenacting the clan invasion. Mm-hmm. So that being said, resources from planets, drop ships, things that allow you to respawn or get missiles, like let's say you use up all your LRM-15s but you respawn, well, do you have the ability to respawn with LRM-15s? Well, what was your resources on that planet? So that's what people are looking at or doing. So this is the first intro of along the lines of why does it matter what clan you belong to or what faction you belong to. And basically they're saying, in this particular instance, they said, join your faction, make it permanent, opt in, which you had to literally opt in using their portal. And once you've opted in, you played so many matches. You had to minimum play 10 matches. And in those 10 matches, they kept track of all of your statistics, which they already have an achievement system set up, which, and they also reset that, but that's a separate thing that I'll talk about here in a little bit. But truthfully speaking, what's really cool about this is now they're keeping track of faction wins, and whichever faction did the best, they got a standing item and 14 days of premium time, and that's actually a pretty hefty chunk of MC right there. So believe it or not, as of tonight, since I spoke to everyone, faction challenge winner was House Steiner, and they came away with a score of 106,871. And if you want to see how that score comes about, they give you the breakdown of how they got that score per player, and then they won 4,867 total matches. So House Steiner people all get a Kerensky standing item to put on their dash. It's a hologram item, and 14 days of premium time. So that's pretty cool. And oh, and by the way, everyone who opted in and played at least 10 matches received the free Gazelle dropship cockpit item automatically. So that was pretty wicked too.
Okay. And just Eve, any reason other than just you never know?
Yeah, I mean, you miss games every once in a while that you haven't played in a while.
Yeah.
There's that. I've heard about the new cool music that I actually haven't heard yet. And honestly speaking, they're doing so much adding to the game with the last Rubicon, and now they're talking about this new Valkyrie thing, which I want to talk about later, that I actually wouldn't mind being present when that actually pops. Mm. So they're going in a direction that I like, and any company that starts moving in a direction that I like, until they tell me otherwise, I'd like to support it. So, well, like I said, we'll talk about Valkyrie here in a little bit and a couple other cool things that Eve's doing, but that's why I want to have it on my computer. I just miss it.
Right. Cool. Alrighty. For me, I've been restarting a game, a playthrough of Mass Effect 3. I've also played a little bit of EQ2. And this past weekend, I jumped in. I was one of the many thousands who got in for WildStar Online. They had their beta weekend. The NDA has been lifted for everyone, not just closed beta guys, but so there's all kinds of pictures and live streams and Twitches and everything else out there. You can check a lot of that out. It's pretty fun. It's pretty cool. I highly recommend it. If just keep an eye out, because there's all kinds of sites giving away the keys. It's not just from WildStar. Like this most recent weekend I got in, I got my key from IGN. So if you're interested in trying it out, just watch the interwebs. Someone's always giving away a key. Let's go ahead and start news off today. If you are a Diablo fan, then you're probably not here listening to this. You're probably logged into Diablo, because Reaper of Souls, the first boxed major expansion for D3, has dropped. They've added a new zone called, I believe it's the Blood Marsh or something like that, as well as a new class, which is the Crusader. I've said before, I'm not a big Diablo fan, although when Diablo 2 was out, I played a ton of Diablo 2. But Diablo 3, I can't get into it. Have you tried it out, Jay?
I have not. I was going to try it out whenever it went cheaper on the PS3. Mm-hmm. And I believe they had a weekend where it was like 50% off or 35% off or something like that. And believe it or not, my pocketbook just would not allow it, and my wife would decapitate me. So I do still want to try it, but I'm probably going to wait till it drops down to like $25 or, you know, $29.95 or something like that.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely different. Did you play 2?
Yes, did play 2, and I believe I had the expansion for 2. Mm-hmm. That gave you the guy that changed into bear,
the druid,
and then yeah, and then I think they also had something else that was part of that,
the assassin,
like a necromancer or something.
Yeah, the assassin.
Assassin, that's what it was. Yeah, I actually had that. Now I can't play it anymore because I lost my Diablo 2 disc, but I still have the expansion disc. Typical.
Nice. It's definitely different. Like I said, I didn't care for it too much. Supposedly they've already made a big huge change to it, and I'm sure now with Reaper of Souls coming out, maybe they'll make some more changes. But for me, I think it just feels too grindy.
Does the Battle.net still get hacked every other week like it used to?
No. Blizzard, you know, has just. They've worked out the kinks on that stuff. That stuff does not get hacked at all.
That's good, because, I mean, I hated saying that, but, I mean, even back up to Diablo 2 days, it was getting hacked, like, every other day. And people would walk in, you know, fully decked out, fully rendered. They, you know, you couldn't beat them, and they just beat the dog snot out of you.
Right. Thorns.
Yeah.
People equipped in thorns and just...
Oh, my God. Thorns. Yeah. Yes.
Blizzard, especially with the popularity of WoW, and I think WoW was hacked once in the early days, and after that, there's just way too many people playing, and it's pretty much good to go, titanium encased. Let's move on to our next little bit of news. We've talked about this before. I'm a Kickstarter on this, City of Titans, as they declare themselves the spiritual successor to City of Heroes.
Woohoo!
Yeah, right. Can't wait. They've recently announced that they will be running on the Unreal 4 engine. So I've already seen a few. I know, I can't wait. Now their concept art looks good. It's not rendered using the engine, I don't believe, so I can only imagine what it's going to look like. I mean, if you've seen anything with, you know, that's been set up on Unreal 4, it is crazy.
I mean, we saw those initial renders of the game where it showed them flying, remember? Mm-hmm. I think another one of them jumping. Yeah. And I didn't think that was done in Unreal, and that kind of that actually states it in here. The game is moving over in development to the Unreal 4 engine, so I'm glad they went with something that's established, easy to troubleshoot, because, I mean, I hate to say this, but people are going to just, if I'm right about this, people are going to pile into this game, and their tech support division is going to be overwhelmed if they don't have something that's simple to, you know, fix. So hopefully, yeah, that'll help.
Yeah, I think, you know, the guys that are doing the game, COT, I mean, they themselves were fans and players of COH. So they know, I mean, like I said, they themselves were fans. They know what the rabid fans are going to demand, what they're going to expect. I do have to say that. I loved City of X, but graphically, you know, it just wasn't there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was an older game, but they still could have upgraded it, blah, 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 blah. But I think it's safe to say that it will be good. It will be polished. It will be ready to go when it drops. Because, like I said, these guys are fans, and they obviously want to put out something
good. Can't wait.
I know. I can't wait. What's the other one? Valiant's online. Have
yeah.
Check that out. Yeah.
No, that's the one that I didn't get. I'm glad you said something, because that was one of the ones that we had talked about, and it just slipped through the sieve of my brain. So.
Yeah, they're actually in pre-alpha at the moment. I think if you were I don't know if they did Kickstarter, or if they just kind of did a crowdfunding from their website. But if you funded the game, you're able to download, and I think we've talked about this, you're able to download the base kind of rough game. You can't play anything, but you can create characters.
Yeah.
And I think you can kind of run around a building and just kind of jump and fly and stuff. But so I checked their site out earlier today, and I think they're, like I said, they are approaching pre-alpha. So
yeah, they released something on 29 March. So there you go, or 20 March. There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're approaching the days of multiple superhero MMOs back on the market, and no more busting chops over Champions Online. What I did there? Did you see?
I know.
You see what I did there?
I saw that. That was awesome. Uh-huh.
All right, let's move on. Guild Wars 2. Big announcement if you're a Guild Wars 2 player. April 2014, that's all they've said. They're releasing a big feature pack. I don't believe it's going to include content per se. No new zones, no new blah, 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 blah. But it's going to include features, imagine that, to include an account-wide wardrobe. So if you unlock a costume piece on your Elementalist, your Mesmer will be able to wear that costume piece account-wide. There will be the wardrobe to include die sets. Die packs will be account-wide as well. That's pretty cool. 40 new traits, horizontal progression, and they said some changes to the crit damage table, runes, and sigils.
Cool.
Have you been playing any Guild Wars 2?
I have. I was playing with a few of our peeps on Holosuite Media, and I believe I was playing what's my beatdown character with the big hammer? I always forget his name. He's a Nord. You know what I'm talking about. Big.
Is he a warrior or a defender?
I think he's a warrior.
Yeah, that's what they do. They just beat face.
Yeah, he's just this big hairy beat you, you know. I'm still over there by the Jotuns, I think. Still.
Yeah, over in Bornland.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's. I was actually playing some today. I was on my Asurin Elementalist, my mage. It's fun. It's for me. Like I've said it on the show before. I have a friend who's a rabid, voracious Guild Wars 2 fan. For me, I can't sit down. You know, back in the old days of like WoW, sit there for 4 or 5 hours at a time. I can't do that with Guild Wars. it feels a little too grindy for me, because there, you know, there aren't really quests. You just run around to the little area events going on and do your thing, and after a while it just kind of gets boring. But it is a fun game. I do play it. I do enjoy it when I have, you know, half an hour to kill or something like that. But it'll be neat to see this, because I have picked up a few costume unlocks, and it'll be nice to be able to pass those around between the tunes, see how that plays out.
You know, so, while we're on that, can I ask you a quick question? I hate to jump in there, but I just got to ask.
No.
I think the first game that I ever saw that included, I guess what we're going to call public quests at this point, where you go into an area and you become part of a public event.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like a, you know, and for people who haven't played or who don't know what we're talking about, prior to Warhammer Online, I think was the first one to do it. They didn't have public quests where basically you have a repeatable event that happens in an area. And when you, as a group, go in there, and when I say as a group, when you wander in there, you become part of the group. If it's at a certain stage, you get points as you help complete the different stages. And at the end, it kind of tallies up all the points and gives people, you know, commiserate rewards for competing in that. And do you think that increased the value of MMOs, or do you think that kind of, I don't know, detracts from the overall storyline of an MMO?
Here's my thing on that. I don't have a problem with it as long as it's not the main basis of gameplay. For instance, SWTOR does that with the world bosses, and there are also area quests. So you'll run into a little area, just like we're talking about. The first one that comes to mind for me is on Alderaan. There's a fort, and the Imperials have taken it over. When you run up to the fort, of course, there's, you know, troopers, and your main boss for the fort is a Sith Lord back in there.
Oh, yeah.
I
know which one you're talking about. That's where they're being sieged.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I have no problem with stuff like that, and I think that can help build a community. Just like, you know, let's go back to City of Heroes. That was a big part of the game. Let me rephrase that. That was a part of the game, your events. Now, I don't think they happened a lot, but in the later expansions, they did.
Oh, like,
but
the Rikti.
Remember, like, do what?
Like the Rikti invasions?
Yeah, well, the Rikti invasion, there was the Hammy event that would pop up every once in a while.
Yep.
Halloween, there was the big pumpkin monster.
Pumpkin monster.
So I think stuff like that, when it's not the main basis of the game, helps to build community. Not always, but sometimes you'll see the same people showing up to those events. You know, people will see, oh, there's that guy who likes to heal. Oh, there's that guy who runs in and tanks for us. But, you know, there again with Guild Wars 2, when that's all you're doing, it just creates Zergs. People just Zerg around the zone. And I think there's a loss of community that way. I think there's a loss of skilled playing, because when you Zerg, you just run in and hit attack. That's all you do. But I do like it. It seems to be a very common thing now in MMOs, the area quests and events and everything. And I do like it. It helps to break up the grind.
The monotony, yeah. That was what I was really going at right there, was I think it does foster a sense of community. If it's done right, implemented right, like you said, honestly, I thought Warhammer Online, I know they did it first, or at least one of the first ones that I remember, but they did do it right. The problem is like you said, almost the entire story arc was evolved around these individual events that they forced you kind of to them, because you had to go from where you spawned at the south end of the map, and by the time you went to the north end of the map, you'd hit like four or five of those, and the north end of the map was nothing but PvP, you know? So you'd go south into the map, go, you know, you'd have a few quests, but mostly they were public quests. And then you'd get involved in the public quests, which you'd get a loot drop. And it also depended on your level versus, you know, how much you contributed. And then by the time you got up to the top, they expected you to be a certain level, and you committed to PvP at that point until you out-leveled the area, and then you moved on to the next map. That wasn't bad, but that couldn't be the storyline. And that's what lost a lot of the players, but that particular part was done so well, it kept me coming back for almost a year and a half and paying that subscription fee.
Yeah,
but I just
and
wish
Warhammer.
Yeah, and it's Warhammer, exactly. But that being said, if another company could implement that, and I say SWTOR's close. They really are close. But the problem is like you said, people end up zerging, and that's I'm just not for that. I mean, you get drops. They shouldn't be random. They should be specific, you know, precious items, and then everything else should just be minimal items that are good for, you know, whatever level that's supposed to be there in the first place.
Yeah.
But
now here's one thing I do like about Guild Wars, and I wish every MMO would do this, is the loot system and the crafting, the gathering system. So just like this, like we're talking about, the area of events, the area events. Let's say it's a whatever, an ogre comes storming into the farmlands and 20 people go running up to fight the ogre. After 5 minutes, he's dead. Everyone loots. Everyone gets loot. There's no roll, there's no random, it just boop, it just pops straight up on your screen, you click the bag to accept it, you get random loot. Everyone gets it. Now, yes, if someone's standing there and just swings a sword once and just stands back and lets everyone else do it, they still get loot. Yeah, they didn't help, but they're also not participating. If they want to stand there for 5 minutes and just watch this stuff happen, whatever, have at it. So I do like the fact that everyone gets loot and stuff like that. And I love the fact that in Guild Wars, 5 people go running up to like a copper ore node. 5 people can mine it. It's available for everyone. Case in point, WoW. Oh gosh, you know, how many times running through WoW, oh, there's a copper, you know, node on my little mini map. I'm running towards it and someone's already beat me to it. And I lose out on the copper. It's, of course, the market skyrockets. If you're heavy into crafting, you love that aspect of the game. It's tough to level that crafting.
Yeah.
So I wish Guild Wars system would be implemented over to other games, but just my soapbox there.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I see both sides of it. It totally jacks up the economy in that there are a lot of people who, that's how they make their money. They just run around, they harvest, and they sell it. That's how they make their money. And this screws it up for them. If everyone can loot, it's no big deal. I get that. But for those of us who love the craft, it's a real pain in the ass to fight for resources when they're already scarce to begin with. So, like I said, just my soapbox there for a minute.
Nah, it's all good.
Also today, Burial at Sea Episode 2, the DLC for Bioshock Infinite, dropped. Now, I have not downloaded this yet, but I plan to have it played by the weekend. This, of course, is the continuation of the Return to Rapture in Bioshock Infinite. And I've talked about this a couple episodes ago. This time, you're playing as Elizabeth and not Booker. In the first episode, you know, there was a real shocking ending to that. So hopefully we'll get some questions answered.
You don't want to say anything, do you? Because you don't, I haven't played it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's horribly spoilerific. I can't even really talk about it because it just gives it all away. Like the first episode one, episode two is also $15. So do expect to pay that, but for me, and I've said I'm a huge Bioshock fan, it's worth it. I can't.
How many hours?
Well, there again, I'm assuming it's going to be another 2 to 3, maybe 4 if you stretch it out.
But it's not going to be like, you know, I don't know, Metal Gear Solid, where you can play the entire game in 10 minutes?
No. Now, like episode 1, and I think I've talked about this as well, if you just follow the story, just point A to point B to point C to point D, you can probably be finished in an hour and a half. If you don't explore any of the side rooms, if you don't go down any of the side hallways, then yeah, and you're not getting your money's worth because you're not really revisiting Rapture like you're supposed to. So I'm assuming this is the same way, just, you know, check out those doors, leave no stone unturned, ride the rails everywhere you go. I highly recommend that. All right, let's move on. Jay has a little bit of some more Eve that he wants to talk. take it away.
Yeah, yeah, Eve Valkyrie, soon to be released. I say soon to be released, in development. They've already released some of the FanFest trailers to show people what it is. Man, you need to go there. We're gonna, like I said, I'm gonna include this, but go to evevalkyrie.com. That's V-A-L-K-Y-R-I-E, valkyrie.com. Check this out. It looks as if, and I'm not gonna, you know, dig too deep into this, that we're getting starfighters in Eve. Now, for those of you who, you know, never played Eve, it's a massive sandbox, future, ultimate future, alternate universe. Literally, we've accidentally transposed ourselves into a different universe. And it's a exploration, mining, collecting for people who like crafting. There's a business aspect. It's just huge. If you don't know about Eve, yeah, I don't know where you've been, but try it out. It's one of the few pay-per that everyone still pays and is happy to be part of. I know a couple of episodes back we talked about how they were setting up a memorial wall for you know, a lot of the Eve players and stuff like that, and it was going to be pretty cool. And like I said, this is all good stuff, but what's interesting now is normally they go bigger. That's just been the trend since it started, and we're talking about a game that's been around how many years now? How long has Eve been around? 2002? Yeah, 2002 or 2003, somewhere right around in there. So 10 years, and they were one of the first companies to ever create one server, not multiple shards of universes where you know 500 people play on this shard, and then when 501 logs in, he's playing in a different one. This is always persistent, always up, and always one universe. Everybody's on the same server. Well, what's interesting is they started off by having smaller craft like frigates, and then you go up to cruisers, and they get bigger and bigger till you know, quite a few releases after 10 years. I'm not even gonna go back over all the releases, but they had world killer ships. Okay, now when we're talking about PvP battle in Eve, we're talking about these guys. The developers are so transparent about their code because they're so stoked. First of all, their code runs on custom built servers by IBM. These servers are literally built specifically for CCCP. This stuff is, they're talking about microseconds, not microseconds. What happens in between a millisecond? And they're trying to transfer data so that hundreds of people can be involved in the same battle all across the world real time. So what impressed me about this, and I know this was a huge roundabout, but we were talking about world killer ships where they'd blow up and it would take out, you know, 400 or 500 players at one time, you know, as they were gating in from different parts of the universe. And this universe is so big, it would literally take you almost 2 days to cross the universe from one side to the other. Two actual real-time days.
Wow.
To traverse the universe from one side to the other. That's how big it is. So keep that in mind, that it would take you, just if you were in EverQuest, just imagine, you know, walking from one side of Norrath to the other. It took you 2 days, literally real time, to do that. That's how big Eve is. So they went the other direction. Now they're doing micro fighters. These are the fighting ships that you deploy, you know, when you deploy a fighter screen between two cruisers. And I was like, wow, they're going to go towards fighters, because, I mean, anyone who's listened to this show knows that's why I like Star Wars. Now, Eve, I mean, not until three releases ago could you even get out of your ship in Eve. You were the ship, right? Basically. Now you can get out of your ship, but what's important is now they've got podded fighters, and these fighters are going to be important. Eve doesn't do anything. They're like the Russians. They don't take a dump without a plan. The fact is, they're going to increase the depth of the game by micronizing the combat, and that is just something I can't wait to see, because up to date, it's been who had the biggest ships, who could throw out the most damage, who had the shields. And I mean, you got to talk about, these guys have stealth ships. One of the, when I played the game, and this is just me saying this because I get kind of excited about it, I created a corporation where our whole reason for being was we would literally take, if someone else had a corporation and they were mining ore or precious metals or whatever they created, and they needed to get from one side of the galaxy, of the Eve galaxy, to the other, our corporation provided transport. They would literally bond us out for money. They would put up X amount of collateral, or we would put up X amount of collateral. We would bond their stuff. We'd move it from point A to point B for them. And if it got hijacked from us by another corporation, we had to upfront the money and pay for it.
Right.
So that was what we did. So now imagine adding small frigates with microfighters for, you know, running screens and stopping people from getting from one jump zone to another. So it's just interesting, and I can't wait to see it, because here's the other thing, and I wanted to throw this out here because we already talked about it a little bit. We haven't talked about it yet, but I want to. I'm really stoked because they're including the Oculus Rift 3D glasses, you know, the sim glasses, as part of their release for this. So basically, you're going to be able to put on this Oculus set. And for anyone who hasn't heard of this, this is what we used to watch back in Johnny Mnemonic, you know, the Keanu Reeves there. This is a real implementation because computers have finally caught up to the ability to do this and have a real-time heads-up display that you strap to your head. It looks like a pair of glasses. And you can move your head, and as you move your head, it turns your point of view, your field of vision, in the game. So now, literally, you can see without shifting, you know, a POV hat or something like that on a joystick. So this is going to increase the game 100-fold. I mean, these guys are light years ahead of other concept designs on space fighters, unless the new one coming out by our friends over at Roberts is going to be better.
Right.
So that's the only other thing I can think of that's going to even come close. And I'm really excited about this. That was the reason I talked at the beginning about re-upping my subscription, because I want to help these people. I want to see that happen. So check out the eFanFest test play footage. And I'm totally on board, especially if Oculus Rift, you know, blows through with this, because the Oculus headset is running at $310 for the SDK if you want to purchase it. And I can't imagine how cheaper it's going to be once it actually hits the market. So what do you think?
I have a question or two. So it's not going to be a standalone game like Dust was. It'll be part of the Dynamic Eve universe.
It looked to be part of the Dynamic Eve universe. And you can say Dust is standalone. It is in a way. But also remember that it links in with the Eve universe, being as if you're on planet, you know, Jockum or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, and then you have a corp that comes into orbit above you. He can call down a strike on your position, and it will be a real-time strike. So that being said, I think that this is supposed to be the same way. Now, I haven't dug entirely so deep into this because I just found out about this day before yesterday. And I didn't see a whole lot, because all they're showing so far, other than what we saw at the Fan Fest, was the integration with the Oculus. But that was enough for me to wet my palate. So
I think if it's a standalone game with only bare interaction like Dust was, I don't think it'll be that great. Now, if it is in the you know, the Eve game, then that's going to be pretty cool. I mean, that's just a whole new level of strategy. Now, of course, you know, players have drones, which can go out and attack, but that's nothing compared to some guy sitting in a cockpit of a fighter. And, you know, maybe five or six of your buddies all buzzing a little frigate or something. That's going to be crazy.
Well, that's the footage that they're showing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's stoking me. Now, don't get me wrong. Like you said, they could just be using the models, you know, from the game itself. It's not like they don't own the rights to that.
Yeah.
But what stoked me was what we're seeing is it showed these ships coming into contact, and then all of a sudden you see these small fighters launched from the ships, and you go from your normal third-person position right above your ship immediately into the cockpit of one of the fighters. So the FanFest video, from what it's showing, is going to be an extension of a current battle, you know, what I'm under the impression of. So I'm really hoping that's what it is, but not knowing is killing me, so.
Right. I did watch that video. It looks pretty cool. I'm almost wondering if they're not trying to already compete with Roberts.
I don't want to say yay on that because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but that is what I was wondering as well. And I hate saying it, but you know, a little stiff competition is always good because in the end, the consumer wins.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, Eve has been the only game around for as far as massive, you know, space sim. So, and Roberts, of course, is definitely going to be competition.
Oh, yeah. That this is going to be good. It's going to be like, you know, De Niro and Pacino going at it in the ring. So.
Right. All right, let's move on. A few days ago, I forget why I was on YouTube looking at something, but I found a channel by this guy, and I think his name is Andy Gilliland. It's G-I-L-L-E-A-N-D. Now, what this guy does is he plays through video games, records the footage, removes the UI and any kind of interaction, and edits the footage so it looks like you're watching a long movie. Now, I listed in our show notes some that he has done, although he has done a lot. For instance, I watched probably a good hour of his Batman Arkham City movie. And what he's obviously done is he's played through the game, he's upgraded all of his equipment, he's gotten all the gadgets, and then he goes back and plays the game. Now, he doesn't go after side quests, he just progresses along the main storyline is what it looks like. So, even then, it's still a 3-hour long movie.
Wow.
Now, you know, oh, who cares, Mike, there's all kinds of... Well, let's say... you want to play Batman Arkham Origins, but you don't want to play Arkham Asylum or Arkham City, but you want to know the story. Go watch this guy's movies. He's also done The Last of Us, which is 4 hours long.
Whoa.
I also saw that he has done Assassin's Creed, I think 3 and 4.
No, oh, darn. I hadn't played 1. That was the one I wanted.
Well, check, because he might have done that as well. Honestly, he has like 30 videos. But they are all long. You are in for a long haul. So it's the gameplay. It's fighting only when necessary. Like I said, he doesn't venture off to do side quests. So you get all the cutscenes. You get all the gameplay that you see. And like I said, I like this guy because he removes the UI. So you don't see any of the flashing stuff on the screen, or as you go through your inventory, you don't see any of that crap. It is literally like watching a long movie of the game. I've thought about checking out the Assassin's Creed stuff just to see it, but I just thought that was pretty cool. I recommend it if you want to get caught up on the storyline of some of the video games that are out. Like I said, his name is Andy Gilliland, G-I-L-L-E-A-N-D. You can just search on YouTube for his channel. Let's move on to another little bit of news. I have recently, and I don't know why I've missed this or what rock I've been living under, but I think what may have happened is it kind of got really pushed by the GDC, Game Developers Conference, that just happened. It's a game called Bound by Flame, and it's produced by a company called Spider's Game. What really caught my eye on this is that someone, I think it either Massively or at IGN, played it and likened it to Mass Effect in a fantasy setting. So it's a fantasy RPG. The gist of the story is you're a mercenary, you're possessed by a flame demon, and you get powers and abilities from the demon within. But like Mass Effect, I guess I should say like BioWare games, as you play through the game, you of course acquire companions. You build relationships with the companions, and you make choices through the storyline that either keep you good or evil, i.e. you allow the demon to come out and possess you more. It looks very cool. It looks neat. And, you know, like I said, I'm a huge Mass Effect fan. I've honestly been looking for something like Mass Effect to play. This might be something I look into. And I was really surprised because it comes out May 9th. And, like I said, I just haven't heard anything on this game, but obviously I've been living under a rock somewhere.
Is that going to be PC only, or is it going to be console?
No, it's everything. Xbox, PlayStation, and PC.
Nice.
Yep. So, check that out. It's just a neat little game that I saw. Wanted to pass along to you, the listener. And we have one more little bit of news, some MechWarrior that Jay's got for us. Go ahead, man.
Oh, yeah, MechWarrior achievements. For those of you who haven't been playing MechWarrior, we were talking earlier about the faction-based thing that they've got going. Well, now, and I say now, they actually announced this, 14th of March. So a little bit ago, not terribly long time ago, but I hadn't brought it up yet. The update currently scheduled for the 18th, so that dropped a few days ago. But basically what we're talking about here is achievements are a way to track specific accomplishments when you're playing the game. You know, I killed so many things, I've amassed this many kills in this weight class, and all that kind of stuff. But what's interesting here is there's a full list of achievements. They've added a few more achievements, and to accommodate the achievement system, they reset everything on the 18th. So now that, you know, they're like, okay, you guys did good, back to zero. And yeah, I know, all current gameplay stats will be archived and will remain available so that you can look at what it was before you got jacked, right? But the stats are being wiped and are match play related. So kills, deaths, win, losses, C-bill matches, X-bill matches, kill assists, spot assists, all that kind of stuff. Those are all examples. What's not being wiped are current XP balances, GXP balances, C-bill balances, mech trees, pilot trees, inventory, and mech bays in ELO. Now, the reason I think this is cool is because a lot of deterrence on pure PvP games like MechWarrior Online is that, oh, I'll never catch up with, you know, so-and-so, he's been playing forever, you know, all that kind of stuff. So people who have the ability to come out there and wipe the floor with people who've been there for a long time are kind of deterred from that because they're like, well, I care about achievements. And ever since what? Ever since Call of Duty, as far as I'm concerned, online achievements have just been, you know, the feather in the cap for people playing. They want to see that stuff, right? Well, it's good that Piranha Games listens because that's really what they wanted to do. And you've got some naysayers out there who are saying, oh, this isn't good, you know. Now we're going to have more kill stealing and stuff like that. But true team sports, which is what this is. This is a team challenge. You know, you've got multiple pug groups, basically, unless you're playing in a clan. Most of the time it's pug. But playing to win, playing to get your achievements, and playing on a team are all overlapping here rather than one being more important than the other. And it's really helpful because it's so easy to get your mech shot out from underneath you in this game. So that being said, I just wanted to throw that out there for everyone who's hadn't played MechWarrior Online. I know I kind of harp on it. It happens to be one of my favorites because I love the MechWarrior universe, period. Also, you know, Catalyst Games has released some new electronic ebooks this week on the MechWarrior world. If you want to check that out, you can pick those up at, drivethroughebook.com, I believe is what it is. But or just go to Catalyst Games and check it out. Get it directly off there. You can get them for your your reader, and also, and I think Google Play has them too. But that being said, if you haven't checked out the MechWarrior Universe Online, check it out. And this is a really good game. I'm really happy with Piranha. They've been doing really well, and they're listening to their community, which to me, the last time I really saw a game that listened to this community with City of Heroes, which is, I guess, why I like this game so much. I feel like they're paying attention to what we want. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a few things that people could fix, but statistics and achievements in a PvP universe is just about everything, especially for these newer kids. So hopefully we'll get everything up and running and see how this goes. But this is just wicked cool. Factions, achievements. We're about to have the clan invasion. It's just, I love the game. So check it out. All right.
So on the achievement things, has that started yet, or have they just announced it?
It was supposed to start. However, they had a "we regret." And then on March 20th, we sent the email starting that the cadet bonus would be reset, allowing 8 million C-bells to be awarded a second time, which 8 million C-bells is enough to buy a new mech, you know? So if you can get the cadet bonus, in other words, you log in, you get the cadet bonus achievement, which is a series of achievements. And then once you have that series, you get the cadet bonus. They give you 8 million C-bells, man. 8 million C-bells will buy you an assault mech. Mm-hmm. So that being said, they will award it for a second time. So that was actually a previous achievement. You will get it again. They will, however, let's see. The C-bell bonus is only available for your first 25 rounds. And players who have already received their cadet bonus will see the achievement as having been previously completed, as you would expect. So, there you go.
Have they actually listed what the achievements are?
I did not see a full listing of all the achievements, but I believe if you go to the website, you can probably pick them up there. I have not looked as of, let me see, yesterday, so.
I'm assuming it's a lot of the usual, like you said, you know, 10 kills yeah. in a heavy or, you know,
Yeah, I was in a scout and killed two heavies, you know.
Right, David and Goliath.
That's it.
That's cool. That's cool. Alrighty, that's going to about wrap us up on news. We're going to move on to geeky stuff. We only have one bit of geeky stuff news. Jay posted that. Why don't you go ahead and take it, Jay?
All right, well, like I said, anybody who ever tuned into our stuff knows we love Kickstarter and knows we love tabletop gaming, right? So 21 days to go on this particular Kickstarter, and it is for tabletop gaming. Imagine that. Combat description cards. Okay, so you're a dungeon master. You've spent, I don't know, the last 3 to 5 days spare time that you don't really have fleshing out your dungeon, fleshing out your monsters, making sure all of your characters meet their requirements, making sure it's not stacked, make sure the treasure tables are cool. Everything's all ready to go. You get ready to play, you get in there, and everybody starts rolling dice, and it's wicked cool, right? You're describing this beastly demon who's 12 feet tall, dripping blood, fire coming out of everything. And your paladin runs up and charges the guy, rolls the dice, and what does he say? I hit you for 17 damage. Really? I hit you for 17 damage. it's hard to fit that in. Now don't get me wrong, your groups that are really tight, they, you know, sometimes they have their own banter, their own play. But if you're playing with a new group or if you're just a new DM, a lot of times you need that little help, you know, a little help in there. So what are you gonna do? 17 points of damage. Well, they've created this combat description card for storytellers and GMs by Conflict Roleplaying, and it's, like I said, it's Kickstarter, has 21 days left to go. Their goal was 5,000. They've already busted through that to 12,520. But what we're talking about here is 100 plus card deck of action words and examples of combat strikes, helping storytellers to know what to say right when describing combat. Now this also helps author, obviously, if you're trying to write something down real fast or if you're just making your adventure, you know, and you need it. What's cool here is that they've divided the cards up, okay, into three different cards divisions: blunt, slashing, and piercing. And anyone who's ever played most RPGs knows that's how they divide up damage types, you know, blunt being a mace or hammer, slashing being a sword with a single blade or, you know, something like that. And then piercing being something that's pokey, like a spear or an epee or something like that. Epee, I guess they pronounce that. But on these cards, and it's hard to describe them without everybody going there. So again, we'll pop this in show notes. But the point is like the front of the card on the far right-hand side, it says blunt in huge words. But then it says stylish, bone-jarring, or thumping. Those are words that you can use when you're talking about what he did. Did he do a finesse strike? Did he do a power strike? Or did he do a ranged strike with a blunt weapon? So if he did a finesse strike, you could say, with a stylish, you know, twist, your weapon spins right into your foe, you know? And another cool thing about this is they've stayed away from using body parts or very specific, super specific, anything like, they never say blood, they would say fluid. They would never say a hand or leg, they'd say appendage. So that way, in case you're finding an octopus and you pick up that card, as your thing, it doesn't say you hit him in the arm, because, you know, eight-armed octopus, yeah. Jelly monster, not so much. So what you end up with is a total of 600 plus unique phrases, 100 plus cards, obviously divided up 200 phrases per set. And for further ease of use, the cards, they've divided it into a physical set and a digital set. So that's even better. So they're offering a lot of pledge levels here. You can start at $1 and work your way all the way up to $1,000. Wow, $1,000. There's a few add-ons that they have, some Kickstarter add-ons, door hangers, like Do Not Disturb, Epic Gaming going on. They have a wristband, custom pencils with combat descriptions imprinted, extra combat description card deck, which is going to be $25, area of effect templates and accessories, and then a, I don't know what you call them, what do you call those, water-based pens and markers with maps.
A
grid map set. Yeah. And they've got those pre-printed maps so that you can use water-based markers and erase them afterwards. So that's real helpful. And again, these are all add-ons to the set itself. So I just think it's a really good idea. It's really helpful. You know, they've got even more stretch goals out there as they keep going. But I know a lot of people may or may not like this, because it's one of those things where if you're a player, or a dungeon master, and you've had the same group for, you know, 5 years, you guys probably have a banter that most people don't. Y'all understand each other, you know. But for somebody who's walking into the store for the first time and he wants to get a group together, or, you know, she wants to start writing a book and she needs some really good, you know, the muse has left the building and you need to say what you need to say, this is a great way to get those juices flowing. So, you know, check it out. I think it's worth it. What do you think?
Yeah. You and I were talking about this before the show. For me personally, it wouldn't really fit my playstyle as a DM, but I can fully understand some groups, some DMs especially, want to really immerse the players in the game, and you know, this is exactly a perfect thing just for that. You know, our group that we play in, they don't really care about the description. They just want to know, you know, is it dead? But yeah, like I said, I think you know, because as a DM, you're keeping track of 500 things going on at once already, coming up with fluff for every attack or every spell cast. Just, you know, the synapse just don't fire that often. So, you know, and like Jay and I were talking, it's $10 for the print-on-demand version of the deck, of the cards, or $20 for pre-printed. Spend the $20, so you're not having to print off 600 cards at home. But that's not a bad price when it comes down to it, for a little help in the creativity department.
It really isn't. And truthfully speaking, like I said, as stuff like this happens, and like you said, you know, you've got the people who don't want to add that. But I mean, the time that they've put into this, the originality of it being needed for a very niche market, but very niche it is. It's agnostic to the systems. You got Dungeons & Dragons, Fate, Pathfinder, Burning Wheel, Mouse Guard, Dragon Age, Savage Worlds, and Conflict. Works with all of those. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. The fact that they did all this, I just like to reward people who come up with stuff like this, because then we get more Kickstarters. So.
Right.
Amen to that.
Kickstarters. Yeah. So check it out. It's a neat thing. Like I said, and frankly, the cards, they don't look bad. You know, the way we're describing it and talking about it almost sounds like it's a white card with black text that just says this, this, and this. But there is artwork on the cards, and they do look good.
Good. And did you see the Kickstarter? If they get to 13,000, what it's going to be? Smells and sounds.
Oh.
a card for smells and sounds. It's a deck for smells and sounds. 15,000 is a booster pack for pain. What do you do when that happens? So-and-so gets hit, what happens? Is it radiating pain, melancholic, agonizing? So, I mean, they're thinking ahead. They didn't just stop it, you know, I hit you for blank damage. They're going to have a, I think they've already, they've already unlocked the Kickstarter for 9,500 stretch goal, which is a, like a DM screen covering the same stuff we're talking about. And they've already unlocked 11,500, which was the hinge plastic carrying case. So, like I said, at 13,000, they get the smells and sounds. Man, I mean, we're only like $700 away from that, people. And if you want to do the $1,000, just jump in there and do the $1,000. Your face is put on the cover of the deck box. No one's done that yet. Right. I mean, your face gets put on this deck box. And I'm telling you, with all the people who've already done it, you're going to be out there at least, 1,200 times. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. I'm kind of stoked about this. I mean, it's not my Eve, bouncy up and downy happy stuff, but this is really cool. So, like I said, I just want to support these guys. I can't say I know them, but man, they seem like cool people to know. So,
absolutely. All right, guys, that's going to about wrap us up for tonight. Kind of a long show. A lot of stuff going on, but stay tuned afterwards. Black Lace on our outro will have our contact information. You can get hold of me via Raptor, PlayStation Network, or Steam under the ID of Teletech 77062.
And you can reach me at Jason, JaySynn, under, what all am I on? PlayStation, Raptor, and I do believe Steam under those three that you can reach me at. So please feel free to log on and frag me. I'd enjoy it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Y'all take care.
Thanks for tuning in to tonight's broadcast of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Join us next week at Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be sure to check holosuitemedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at the Pulse Gamecast. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to thepulsegamecast@gmail.com.